You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with Karen. In fact, Karen and I disagree on many things. And we encourage you to disagree or agree with us. We encourage your opinion at 960-960-650-650. I do think people miss this sometimes, Karen. I think they hear what they want, and if everybody doesn't agree with them, they get somewhat offended. This is a very gray issue, and it's one that a lot of people agree to be on one side of, and there's a contingent on the other. And just because Brendan Morrison doesn't agree with your point of view, well, maybe Gary in Maple Ridge, you missed Devon Taves an hour earlier, who agreed with your point of view as to where hockey is. We've tried to get in as many different voices into this conversation as we can. And all we can do with the guests we have is ask them their opinion, Karen. And then they give us their opinion like we encourage our listeners to do. And we have a discussion based on that.
Hey, we had, who do we have on early? Scott, his name's blanking me, and this is really embarrassing.
Devon Taves, on Tuesday.
Vegas
Mike
Golden
McKenna.
Knights.
Mike McKenna was one of the first this week.
Exactly. Mike McKenna, I apologize to Mike if he's listening. He literally came out and said the problem that he had with Tom Wilson was the fact he didn't like the punch to the back of the head to Buznevich, but he thought that Panarin and a wrestling scrum, basically, and you kind of know what's going to happen, and Panarin, you know, basically was a willing participant at that case. You and I don't see it that way. We don't agree with it. But, I mean, we're listening from NHL players who saw it one way, and that's fine. Our job is to have an opinion, Scott, on some things. And some people who play the game will have a different opinion. This is from John in Vancouver. And John in Vancouver, I know, has been very vocal, Scott, in terms of thinking that the Tom Wilson situation was fine. And he said, fighting is way down. The players are more skilled. The game is way faster. There's no room for straight up goons on our roster any longer. What is wrong with our game exactly? Yes. Is made great strides by any majors. So those who are hacking our game this week are doing it for their own purposes, not the games. And I think, John, for what Scott and I are saying is that we actually like the way the game is right now. Scott, I know you would say there'd be a little bit more maybe in terms of punishing fighting, but I'm fine with how fighting is right now, and it has a part in the game, and I'm fine with the skill. I'm fine with the type of hockey we're seeing. I like everything about it. What I don't want in the game is a situation where someone can come in and physically hurt somebody because of the fact they are a repeat offender in the game. That's all I'm saying. I don't like his actions from the other night. I think they are suspendable. I think he's a repeat offender. In this case, you have to take the repeat offender status into consideration because of his past history. And I think, would you have seen a little bit from last night? Probably. You would have seen people, maybe there's some emotions run higher, but Wilson wouldn't have been in the game, Scott, and you wouldn't have seen a line brawl to start the game either.
There are different rules, in my opinion, for people who have crossed the line repeatedly. I agree with you on that. And the NHL doesn't treat that as such. And John or Gary or whoever's texting in, you can think the NHL does things the right way, but we can have a discussion about it. Like, the way I see it is, if I were to equate it to a real-life situation, someone who's repeatedly offended and has a probation officer, which is kind of where Tom Wilson is. Like, when you are within a year and a half, you're kind of on NHL probation. Don't cross the line or else. Well, someone who has a probation officer has a curfew, for example, Karen. If they don't make their curfew, there are consequences. If I don't make a curfew because I just happen to be late, there's probably no consequences for me because I haven't been an offender in our system. I know there's no easy parallel. I know sports are different. I do agree with you on that. We don't all have to agree on this subject. It's fine. But we do need to have a conversation about how the game can improve. And, John, you might love where the game's at right now. I am of the mind that no matter how good you think your product is, you should always be thinking of how it can be better. And hopefully we'll hear from Chris Versteeg this segment. We're trying to turn around some audio because Versteeg has turned into a very good analyst. And it's funny. I said this about Versteeg and Kevin Bieksa. Like, there are certain fan bases across this country that didn't like either player because of the way each player played. And yet they listen to them now as analysts and they go, I actually kind of like that guy. He makes a lot of sense. Now, I might not agree with everything, but he's pretty good at his job. Chris Versteeg's turned into a very good analyst, and he sees it a different way as a guy who was mucking it up in scrums and a guy who was doing some cheap and dirty things and hooking and holding and hacking.
And, Scott, you and I talked about the fact that Louis DeBrusque was on earlier with the morning show. We played the clips for our audience and talking about the fact that, you know, Craig McTavish told him it doesn't matter who you go up against. You never take it easy on a guy. You just, you know, beat him like anybody else or try to fight him like anybody else. You and I disagreed on this, but I guess like Matt Stajan played the game. He disagreed with us. He agrees more with Louis. This text comes in from Red Light in Calgary. It says, Stajan said the same thing during last night's Flames intermission. The more I thought about his opinion, the more I agreed. You see the name bar? You don't have to know what kind of fight you are going to be picking. I'm not defending Wilson. I think he's a clown and he should have been suspended the rest of the regular season, but I also agreed with Stajan and DeBrust. Don't jump on a guy's back. And in terms of Red Light agrees with, if, you know, was Panarin, he knew what he was getting into, I guess, is what the comments are. I personally think that Panarin was trying to stop Wilson from pounding his teammate in Ryan Strome, and basically wanted to have that stop happening, Scott. I don't think he wanted to fight Tom Wilson, so I think that's where I disagree. But again, NHL player sees it a little differently than we do.
This texter says, I don't like the Leafs or the Caps because there's the Edler conversation where Wayne Simmonds let up a little bit during the course of the fight. Some people don't think that. That's what I thought I saw. I thought I saw Wayne Simmonds at some point during that fight go, ah, okay, what am I doing here? He dropped the gloves, but I'm not going to continue to punish him. It could have been really bad. Like, he could have really filled Alex Edler in. This texter goes on to say, Edler stood up because it was right. That dude went after Wilson from behind. I don't know, Scott, I listen to you almost every day. I don't agree with you on this one. And that's fine. We don't have to agree. I am with Karen on this, and I think many of our listeners agree. Panarin didn't go after Wilson, my opinion. I saw a guy who was trying to tie a tougher player up so that he did not inflict further damage on his teammates. Not, okay, you're hitting my teammates, let's go, I'm the next guy in line.
No, did you, like, have you not watched the scrum? Like, I'm not saying people are seeing what they're seeing, but literally Tom Wilson was pounding on Ryan Strome, who pulled Wilson off of Buznevich to start with, who gave him the original punch in the back of the head, and then Strome's getting pounded, and then Panarin's trying to tie him up, and it looks like he jumps on his back because of Wilson being a taller guy, and Panarin's feet leaves the ground, but he's kind of giving a bear hug, trying to hold his arms. The situation that I have is it turns into a scrum, Scott, in the corner, and then Wilson looks and knows who it is. He pushes Panarin's helmet off, and then Panarin's defending himself because of this situation. And all of a sudden, he throws him to the ground without a helmet on. Then he gives him one more punch in the head. And then again, I didn't like the ragdoll either. That one, you know, picks him up and kind of throws him down. His forehead could have hit the ground. That's what I didn't like about the situation.
A lot of people weighing in on where we're at with player safety. People think it's a pretty ironic term, given some of the suspensions that either don't get handed down or do. Shane Gostisbehere, not surprisingly, didn't agree with his suspension. I don't know how you argue against it. I get you want to play your games. I get you don't want to have to pay the money that comes with missing those games. Like, you forfeit the check and it goes into the player assistance fund. I don't know what he's thinking on that play. And I know most of the focus is on Tom Wilson, the New York Rangers, this week. There have been a couple of other incidents that the Department of Player Safety has had to look at. The Shane Gostisbehere one, where after an empty net goal by Mark Friedman of the Penguins, and he's peeling off to his right, Gostisbehere decides, I'm going to give him a shot here, because he's mad that Friedman has scored and he's salty at the end of a game that they're getting blown out. And he gives him that hit on the hip that Friedman doesn't expect, and he drives him into the boards. Like, he's really lucky Friedman wasn't injured badly. I think anybody who watches hockey knows that's a dangerous hit. Gostisbehere came out, disagreed. Typical, because nobody likes to think they're in the wrong, and we often hear this from players who get suspended. I don't even know how you argue against that one. Like, that is so obvious to me.
Well, he's arguing against it because he's trying to say that I wasn't a dirty player. I didn't mean to do it. But yeah, you did. You did it. You know, accept the punishment, go on, move on. It's like Pavel Buznevich. Like, he's going to get suspended today. He is. For the final two games of the regular season, I guarantee it. And if he doesn't, I'll take the L on that one because, you know, he used his stick as a weapon, and maybe he didn't fully get Anthony Mantha, you know, in the nose or anything like that, but he still was a high cross check into the facial area. He's going to get suspended. Like, that is, he can't argue with that one. He was looking for something all night, Scott, and he finally got it with Mantha. So I'm okay on these. Sorry.
And I'm with you. I'm with you. He deserves a suspension. He's going to get one, and it's on a tee. Like, it's on a tee. You guys have two games left. They don't mean anything for you in the standings. We can't have you go into games using your stick as a weapon. You can't do that to guys. You cross the line. Go sit down. Your season ends early. You can take this weekend off. What's interesting about the game last night is that both teams felt the same way for different reasons, that they came together more as a team as a result of different things that happened on the ice last night. First, let's hear from Rangers head coach David Quinn, who obviously was very disappointed that the league didn't do anything. He made that very clear after the game. He made it very clear before the game, and now he's got all this other stuff to deal with as well last night. He did set the lineup last night. He did see his team throw down six times in the first 5 minutes of the game. And here's what he had to say on his team's response.
You know, when something like that happens, it certainly speaks volumes to how these guys want to play for each other and care for each other in difficult circumstances. And we all saw what happened the other night. Nobody's happy about it. And I couldn't be more proud of these guys.
I agree with them. I mean, he knew something was going to happen. I don't know if they talked about it before the game, Scott. We have no idea. But if justice in their eyes was not given out by the league, something had to be done on the ice, and their players responded.
And Washington Capitals agreed with them. And you could tell they agreed with them because those three fights off the opening faceoff were agreed to before the puck was dropped. Like, they've got the shot of Nick Dowd at center ice going, yep, okay, let's do this. And you heard Capitals players talk. Dowd was at the podium last night and said, hey, they didn't feel like things were taken care of. We basically obliged them. I'm paraphrasing here. Okay, let's settle this score in this way. They did it with guys who were same weight class, about the same size, and it was sort of done. Obviously, Brendan Smith goes after Tom Wilson. I think we all expected that. I don't think we expected to see Ryan Strome fighting Lars Eller. I was actually very surprised with how Ryan Strome acquitted himself as a fighter.
I was a little more Lars Eller. He strikes me as a bit more of a not a willing participant in a fight.
But I've seen him in fights before. I can't recall seeing Ryan Strome in fights before.
Hey, you know, the best visual last night, Scott, was the aerial view of the Washington Capitals penalty box. I think they had more players in the penalty box than they did on their bench at one point. Like, it was pretty funny trying to fit everybody in there.
Yeah, it is always comical. It is always comical, right? When you get too many players in a penalty box. There's just not enough room, and who's standing, who's not? Well, you guys are going to be out of the box first. I guess it's your time to stand. There is something that's a little bit comical about that.
I think, I forget who I saw it, and I forget who said it on Twitter, but I found it hilarious. It's like me when this pandemic's over and all my friends, like, just gathered in a very small area, close together, you know, breathing on each other, because we're allowed to do that at that point too. So yeah, I thought that was kind of says what today's society is about. Yeah, when all my friends get together, that's going to be us, the Washington Capitals, close contact. In a ballot box.
Well, the New York Rangers feel like last night brought them closer together. The Washington Capitals feel the same way, less because of the fighting and more because of TJ Oshie. You probably know something about this story. You probably heard about it. Maybe you saw the highlights last night. TJ Oshie lost his father this week. And if you go back a couple of years, when the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, he had the Brendan Morrison referenced this last segment. He had the emotional on-ice interview saying, my dad's here. He's just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Like, he doesn't remember a lot of things that happened. And I think his line at the time was, he sure as hell is going to remember this. And he had tears in his eyes, and there was the emotional embrace on the ice. And it was a really good feel-good story for the Capitals and the family of the Oshies. He loses his father this week. If he had chosen not to play for the rest of the regular season, if he'd chosen not to play at all again this year, that would have been fine. People would have understood. Everybody grieves in different ways. And I did not have time for those who said, what's he even doing in the lineup? People choose to grieve in different ways. Some people throw themselves back into their work because they need a sense of normalcy. For TJ Oshie, that's what it was. There was no pressure to come back. They called his dad coach, so they had a coach sticker on their helmets last night. And what happens? TJ Oshie gets a hat trick last night, and he was overcome with emotion on the bench, Karen.
Yeah, and they were feeding him in that third period, Scott. Like, they were trying to get him that empty netter, and then he gets the third goal, and then he gets the empty netter to complete the hat trick. And even the reaction from his teammates on the ice in the moment, they all jumped and grabbed and were hugging him. You saw the bench, and the trainers were so excited for him. The coaches were so excited, the entire bench. And then when he gets back, obviously that's when the emotion hits him. I found myself getting a little emotional watching that. Like, these kind of things really affect me in terms of just seeing how, you know, you think of these guys and, you know, they're hockey players, and it's a different sort of emotion we usually see out there. You know, like, it's the violent type of emotion at time. And this one was like the human aspect of it. And it was so good to see.
We can all relate to it. We can all relate to it. Not because all of us have lost a parent. I hope for most of our listeners that's not the case. But many of you have. Many of you know that it's affected you or your friends or your family in different ways. And you see this a lot, Karen. Like, somebody will lose a family member due to a disease, and they will run a 10K or they'll do a marathon in support of their loved one that was lost. And you see the emotion that those people are overcome with after accomplishing that. TJ Oshie got caught up in that emotion. It's understandable. If you watched that last night and you didn't feel something, book a cardiologist appointment because you might not have something going right in your heart. Nick Backstrom was the guy who came over after the game. He had a long hug with his teammate and longtime teammate, TJ Oshie, and he said something to him. Backstrom was one of the Capitals who was at the podium after the game last night, and here's what he had to say about that hug and what he said during that exchange.
Yeah, I mean, I saw he got emotional there at the end, and which is understandable, but I felt like he needed a hug. I mean, I think I told him, like, you're the strongest person I know. I mean, that's first of all, it's so impressive that he actually played today, I think, and how he led the way. I mean, it's got to be so tough. I can only imagine. So, just to, as I said earlier, I mean, show the support. I mean, we're a family. We're in this together, and his loss, everyone's loss. So we feel for him.
Scott, and obviously TJ Oshie didn't speak. They didn't make him available after the game, but I'm pretty sure he probably would have said, Coach, I did this for Coach, and he would have wanted me to play. And this reminds me of situations where you think of Brett Favre, that Monday Night Football game. And thank you for Rager for pointing this out in the text message inbox, because just reminded me, like, that Monday Night Football game that Brett Favre, you know, just after his dad had died, you know, he opens the game with 9 straight passes to start. He's got 4 touchdowns in the first half. He gets 311 yards in the first half, just has an epic night. And you have the picture of him hugging his wife at the time in the fourth quarter and him overcoming emotion. You've got the situation like Joanie Rochette back in the 2010 Olympics. Like, she finds out just when she arrives in Vancouver that her mother's passed away. And she decides to stay here and compete, and she has her best personal short program that she's ever done for that competition. She walks away with the bronze medal at the Olympics, and remember her on the podium, standing there with tears in her eyes. Like, you get this because you want to compete for them.
Absolutely. And we get the text in from Torgi and Langley, who says, TJ Oshie is a guy that you win with and you play for. I love it. He's probably going to be a member of the Seattle Kraken next year. Like, that is somewhat of a fait accompli. People look at the protection list that they're going to have in Washington. TJ Oshie is likely to be the odd man out. Grew up partially in Mount Vernon, Pacific Northwest. They know him in that state. There's lots of reasons to love the guy. We remember what he did for Team USA in terms of memorable shootouts back in Sochi as well. So he's a name that's probably on his way to this division. You're probably going to see more of him next year. Hey, they might do something different. They might find a way to make a deal in Washington, but most people figure TJ Oshie is going to be a member and a prominent member of the Seattle Kraken next year.
He strikes me as a good leader too, Scott. Obviously, I think he's very respected by his teammates. I think he's very respected by his opposing teammates as well. I think a lot of guys in the NHL see him as one of the really good guys. So I think it'd be a good leadership role to come to Seattle too.
A lot of text still coming in. This one, you guys are hilarious. Panarin can defend himself, but Wilson can't. Again, this is where we have a disconnect and see things differently. And you're entitled to your opinion, unsigned texter. Panarin isn't defending himself in that situation from my point of view. He is trying to be the mediator. He didn't go in throwing punches at Tom Wilson. He went in trying to stop what was happening from continuing to happen. I know people see it differently. I know the people who are on the Tom Wilson side of things say, he jumped on his back. What's the guy supposed to do? Well, when they got to the feet and he sees he's taking on a superstar who's 50 pounds less, maybe not exact all of his power on him. I'm not even saying he can't give Panarin a little bit of the chin music and those little rabbit punches when you're grabbing a guy's jersey just to let him know, hey, we both know what would happen if this happened, right? We both know what would happen. I've got you by the front of the jersey, and you just give him the little shots on the chin and go, if we were to really throw down, you would be in some serious, serious trouble. That happens all the time in NHL scrums.
Scott, they could have just stayed against the wall like they were, or the glass there, right? And have that situation happen. But then, you know, Wilson goes out of his mind and pulls him away and then throws him down to the ice and pulls his hair and knocks his helmet off. Like, it just, I don't know. I don't think that situation is healthy for the league, and I don't think it needs to be in there. This text comes in from Mac in North Van. Speaking from personal experience playing against Mark Friedman for many years, Ghost probably saw who it was because they used to play together and wanted to get his licks in. Friedman isn't generally liked by his own teammates or others on the ice, so he probably saw an opportunity and went for it. Fair enough, Mac, and I don't know Mark Friedman is type of player and a teammate. I have no personal experience with him, but here's the thing. What Gostis Bear still is cheap, and he needs to pay the price for it.
You're responsible for your actions. You're responsible for your actions, and what he did was extremely dangerous. Greg sends in an interesting text saying, mental health. I've heard repeatedly about how Wilson snaps and other players as well, and how they basically lose control. That's an instability issue and a mental health issue that should be addressed, according to the texter. Greg, I like fighting in the NHL to an extent, says Greg, but self-control has to be a priority. It needs to be talked about. Players like Wilson need help before things get worse. Mental health should be at the forefront of this discussion. No one's really raised that point. It's fair. It's fair to have a conversation about what's going on here. Like, why are you unable in some of these situations not to show restraint?
Well, and we don't know what situation Tom Wilson's in, Scott. Like, honestly, like, we don't know anything about him personally in terms of, he's not someone I don't think that's been outspoken on this site type of thing, so we don't know the situation that he's in.
I'm not saying, and just so people don't misconstrue it, I'm not saying Tom Wilson has a mental health issue. I have no idea.
And what
what Greg is saying here is, like, maybe that's something that needs to be explored. Like, maybe there's a further conversation that needs to happen. Sure, I think that's healthy for all of us, quite frankly, Greg. Not just a guy who's playing in the NHL that was at the center of what has become a much, much talked about incident.
This comes in from Johnny Mac. It's really about fair fighting within your weight class. Despite no fighting history, Edler is a big physical defenseman. He's going back to the Edler Wayne Simmons conversation we had, Scott. Big physical defenseman who lays heavy checks and was in Simmons' weight class. I don't think if a player like Pedersen had... Oh, I lost here. I don't think if Pedersen had used his knee on Hyman, a heavyweight, he would have been a player to dispense the code of justice, and that's fair enough. Like, Edler had to answer the bell, and maybe because of the fact he was a physical defenseman and Wayne Simmons thought he could go after him, and that the two game suspension, I don't know if Wayne Simmons would have gone after an Elias Pettersson, but we'll never know, I guess, in the situation. I don't think Frontier Justice and the code would have, I think he's right, I don't think it probably would have come into consideration in that as well.
Should have asked Mo if he's now jealous of Alex Edler. Brendan Morrison told us a few months ago that right toward the end of his career, he actually tried to get in a fight because he realized that his career was coming to an end and he'd never been in a fight in the NHL. And
really?
He kind of wanted to have one. And he said there were a couple of guys he tried to entice to fight him, like off a faceoff or something. And they all kind of laughed at him, like, no, I'm not going to fight you. And so he finished his NHL career not having a fight, that he kind of wanted to have one on his resume, but he wasn't able to get it. So maybe he's actually a little jealous of Alex Edler, a guy who hadn't fought in 915 games that he threw down. Threw down the gloves once.
I will say this, like, does Alex Edler, is he happy he has that on his resume now? He's probably like, I probably could have gone my entire career without having to fight anybody. Again, go back and watch that, people. Like, he barely knows how to get his gloves off in that situation. Like, it's actually kind of funny to watch.
But he survived, so maybe he's okay with it now. We're going to talk to Darren Millard. There was a lot else going on in hockey last night, including Marc-Andre Fleury getting into third place all-time on the NHL wins list. We will talk to him about that situation. Who's the starting goaltender in Vegas come playoff time? It's easy to say Marc-Andre Fleury, but they've been alternating back and forth, and both guys have been largely successful. We know how that choice went down last year. I want to tell you before we get there, though, that you can be the envy of the neighborhood. Craftsman and Sportsnet are teaming up to give one lucky winner the chance to win $20,000 in cash and Craftsman tools and storage to create your own dream garage. To enter for your chance to win the Craftsman Dream Garage, visit sportsnet.ca/craftsman. Enter weekly to increase your chances. No purchase is necessary. Contest ends June 20th of this year. See full rules for details. Craftsman tools are available at Lowe's and Rona stores across Canada and amazon.ca. You know what the reaction has been like in a couple of Canadian markets? What's it been like in Sin City? We'll get into it with Darren Millard next on Rintoul and Sermon. I think people understand why, given the temperature of our inboxes today. Man, we got a lot of texters at 960, 960, 650, 650. Why the focal point has been hockey for most of this week and for most of this show. There are a couple good stories around sports and a really interesting one that's developed in baseball today that I don't think many people saw coming. Yeah. We will touch on that in the 12 o'clock hour. Some good hockey news coming down today. good hockey news coming today. The Dream Gap Tour, sponsored by Secret, they're going to have some events in Calgary later this month. And we all know what happened with the Women's World Championship that was supposed to be played right now, in fact. It was supposed to open today in Halifax and Truro, Nova Scotia. Today was supposed to be the day. They pushed it off. It's likely going to be in Canada. A lot of people feel like it's going to be held in Alberta. It's going to happen at the end of August now. So at least we have some clarity on when. We just don't know where. But a lot of the top women's professional players are going to have a place to play later this month. They're going to hold a week-long tournament in Calgary at the Saddle Dome. It's going to be broadcast on Sportsnet. It's going to be round-robin format. There's going to be a PWHPA team coming out of Montreal, Toronto, and another out of Calgary. They'll play a couple times round robin. The two teams will then play. The two teams that are top of the standings will play to win the tournament there. It's going to get a good platform. Good news today coming down in the world of hockey and an opportunity to see some of the top women's players on this planet.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. I mean, I know you and I, two people, very disappointed when we heard that the World Championship was getting canceled. One, we felt horrible for these women because a lot of them hadn't played in 14 months. They had their previous World Championship obviously canceled during the pandemic. So for them, they finally had something to look forward to and getting back on the ice and playing the sport that they love. And then to have that ripped out basically the day before that they were supposed to have teams arriving, was it really sucked. And so I'm happy eyes are back on women's hockey. Like, this is a really good thing. 60 players from the three Canadian hubs, Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, will play to determine the cup. And again, Sportsnet's going to broadcast it, so it's going to have eyes on this. And we saw them play, what was it, MSG? They played earlier this season, and Chicago as well. So two iconic, you know, original six cities, hockey, big hockey markets in terms of, you know, popularity of that sport as well. So I'm really happy that the Flames stepped up and that this is going to happen.
Well, and they were going to play in Toronto, but unfortunately, because of COVID protocols, that game didn't happen. But now we've got more games to look forward to. Some of the other good stories last night in hockey, we can get into with Darren Millard. Obviously, we'll talk on the biggest story of the week with Darren Millard. But Marc-Andre Fleury last night becomes the third most winning goalie in NHL history. He passes Roberto Luongo last night. Gets win 490, an important one for Vegas, quite frankly, because Minnesota had their number. It's still a potential first-round matchup, but because of that victory, it makes it at least a little less likely. Colorado still might overtake Vegas for the top of the division. It makes Minnesota's chances of getting there that much less, but at least for Vegas and Marc-Andre Fleury, if he happens to be the starting goaltender going into the playoffs, okay, we beat them. We found a way to get past them. They hadn't beaten them since very early in the season. It had been five straight wins for Minnesota, including a big comeback win earlier this week. Vegas gets over last night. Marc-Andre Fleury gets over, and he gets a little nice chunk of NHL history, just 10 wins away from 500.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Passing Roberto Luongo to sit in third, that's a pretty good name to pass there for Marc-Andre Fleury. I want to talk to Darren about this, too, because, again, we saw kind of how Vegas wanted to get rid of him. The contract, they signed Robin Lehner to be their starter, and Marc-Andre Fleury's in the Vezina conversation. It's basically gone about being the big professional in this. I mean, again, I don't want to like compare this like to a Brett Favre situation, but at the same time, like, look at how he reacted to having his quote-unquote replacement join the team, and Marc-Andre Fleury just took it in stride and says, okay, play me when you do, and when I do, I'm going to play really well for you. They have a little bit tougher schedule, Scott. We did talk about the schedule for Colorado. They have two games against St. Louis, who have not locked up that fourth spot in the West either, so those games are going to be pretty intense hockey games. Then they play that game against Colorado, and that could be for first place in the division and wrap up the season against San Jose. So still a lot of things to shake down, but that's going to – any of those series that we're going to see in the playoffs, no matter who it is, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing this West, whatever you want to call it, first two rounds of the playoffs. I think they'll be great hockey.
Yeah, that's not the only division that's going to be great. Marc-Andre Fleury, not the only guy who was maybe on his way out of Sin City in the offseason as well, but it didn't happen. Max Pacioretty's another guy whose name was bandied about in the offseason, trying to move him, got to move money, bringing in Alex Pietrangelo. That deal didn't end up happening. Pacioretty's having a really good year. He's at 51 points now. He's got 24 and 27 on the year. He's responded to that noise very well. Marc-Andre Fleury's responded to that noise very well. Very interesting team to watch going into the playoffs this year.
You know what else got me a little emotional last night? And I have no vested interest in this player. I really don't. David Backes. And he hasn't really said that he hasn't come out like the Ryan Miller and say that he's retiring after this year. But he did. The expectation was that was going to be his last game in St. Louis. And we know, you know, his history with the St. Louis Blues. And so after the game, they lined up to shake his hand. And then kudos to St. Louis. The players then went and shook Ryan Miller's hand, too, to give him props for what a career he's had. Backes got quite emotional. A longtime trainer there in St. Louis came over and hugged him on the ice. And then he went over to hug somebody else, too. So, so between Oshie and that last night, there was a few tears in the Sermon household.
Did they give him a puppy? No? Backes is a big puppy guy. He's a big dog guy. Like, Backes is, remember the guy, he rescued some of those Russian dogs when he was over at the Olympics in Sochi.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he's a big dog guy, big rescue dog guy. I wondered if they gave him a puppy last night in St. Louis. Darren Millard joins us now. Obviously, a host of Vegas Golden Knights broadcast. Does an excellent job with the Chirp podcast on NHL.com and a frequent contributor to this show when he has time. Darren, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Sorry, it's been a little bit frantic around these parts in the last couple of weeks, but starting to head down the stretch drive.
Not as frantic as it's been in New York this week. What did you make of everything you saw from Monday to what culminated last night? The firings in the front office, Barb's going back, statements being released, a $250,000 fine today. What did you make of this?
Chaos. Nuclear reaction from the New York Rangers, and I'll go back to the start and might as well begin and go through it in order. It was dirty, it was greasy, it was old school hockey, if you want to use that terminology by Tom during the scrum with both Buchnevich and Panarin. But I was probably in the minority that didn't feel like it was suspension worthy. Certainly a fine. He probably should have been tossed out of the game at the time. I was more offended by the stupid flex that he did and the childish of that in the penalty box. But I didn't think it was worthy of a suspension. And then you go forward to the next day with a statement, which is unprecedented in my time covering the league. And certainly called into question the integrity of not just George Parros, but the National Hockey League and how it covers things. The reaction by the team on the ice was, I don't know, why do three players have to fight or six players have to fight because of Tom Wilson? I totally anticipated and expected multiple runs at Wilson during the game, and Brendan Smith did that when he got on the ice, but the theatrics of the three fights right off the face-off was a little goofy to me. It got attention, whether it's good or bad, you can decide. But then the firings right in the middle of it, shocking. John Davidson was brought in. He's only been on the job 2 years. Jeff Gorton went along with the rebuild, and yeah, they've been pushed around a little bit, but that's something that you can acknowledge or address in the off season. But I thought they have a pretty good thing going there between the free agent signings and the drafting and the lottery wins that they've got. I thought they were on a pretty good path. I don't think that they're a playoff team right now, certainly not in the pandemic East Division, which is stacked. And if that's the case, if that's why the changes were made, because they thought they could compete for a playoff spot or should have been in the playoffs this year, I think that's slightly misguided.
So, Darren, there's this conversation today of, hey, nobody looked away from that game. In fact, quite the opposite. People tuned in, yep. Need more of this in the NHL. The other side is, hold on a second here. We don't need more of that. It was a one-off. In fact, we need to highlight the skill level, speed, and finesse of this game like other leagues have done. There's a brand-new broadcast contract coming into play next year in the States with a couple of different networks. What should the league be selling?
Well, I don't think you sell it either way. I think it's a one-off, and sure, what happens with one-offs is they get a whole bunch of it attention, and then it goes away. So I think for ESPN SportsCenter to have it on one of the lead items last night, if not the lead item last night, would be expected, and I don't think that's just because they acquired the rights, but it's because it's different, it's unique, it's crazy, it's it's wild for those that are around the league every day, never mind if you're just a casual hockey fan or you don't pay much attention to the game. So I think it's just one of those unique events, and we'll pay a lot of attention to it right now, but I there's no way this becomes the norm by any means. You might see a few more scraps, or you might see the Rangers add some muscle next year, but I wouldn't worry about this becoming a skill or brawn type of decision, whether or not the league goes down a different path. I think we pretty much stay on the same course that we are right now.
Darren, I want to talk to you about Marc-Andre Fleury, and Scott and I touched on this before we got you on. He is now third alone, passing Roberto Luongo for all-time wins by an NHL goaltender. Now, this year, we know what happened with Vegas in the offseason and signing Robin Lehner to a longer-term deal and potentially trying to trade Andre Fleury. He could have pouted, but instead, you know, he's in the Vezina conversation. Were you surprised at all with how the level of play that he came out with this season?
Maybe a little bit, in the sense that he had to carry a bulk of the load when Robin was injured and suffered a concussion in the early parts of the season. It was Marc-Andre Fleury who had to carry a stretch over 20 games. And it wasn't just that he had played those 18, 19 games in a row, but he played at a level that would challenge the best performances of his career. So at 36 years old, being able to play a month and a bit more in succession at that steady high level, that's a bit of a surprise. And that's a surprise for almost anybody right now. But then to be able to do it at 36 years old was really impressive, and also gave some real solid backing to what the management did here in holding on to $12 million worth of goaltenders in the offseason, instead of making that change and going with just one player. But it's been impressive. It's a storyline that you can't pay enough attention to, because he's such a cool guy and a fun guy. Hey, you look at, he's been 18 years in the National Hockey League, and Luongo, Roberto Luongo's comments when Marc-Andre tied him or on the weekend, said it best. Like, he's one of the nicest teammates he's ever had. They were teammates on the 2010 Olympic team in Vancouver when Fleury was the third goaltender, and said that Luongo added that if he could pick one guy to break the record, it would be Marc-Andre Fleury. So just, like, there's no bad things about him. And then last night, you see a different side of him, where he's fiercely competitive, and in a nasty game against Washington and the Rangers got a lot of the attention, but it was a really nasty first period between Vegas and Minnesota last night with numerous stoppages and scrums and kerfuffles during the game. And Fleury was right in the middle of that whenever he could, whether it's shoveling gloves aside or popping Ryan Hartman or getting involved in pulling or pushing another player. You saw a physical competitive Marc-Andre Fleury as well. So he's got more range than a lot of goaltenders. And at 36 years old, his athletic ability is showing no signs of slowing down. He probably needs 3 years to catch Patrick Waugh. I don't think Father Time's going to allow him to catch up to Marty Brodeur, but he probably needs 3 years to catch up to Patrick Waugh. Now, that said, I'll just finish on this note. I didn't think he'd get anywhere close. In a 56-game schedule, I didn't think he'd be able to approach 25 wins this year, just because there's not enough runway, and he's far ahead of schedule. I thought challenging Roberto Luongo or Ed Belfour for top five would have to wait another year, but he's just been mowing them down.
You mentioned the rough stuff in the game last night. I saw the Golden Knights tweet out at one point, a little bit of rough stuff, not as much as that other game, low with those seeing eyes. When it comes to that game last night, though, how important a win was that for just the mental aspect moving forward for the Vegas, just knowing that they can get a win against this Wild team?
Yeah, I think it's important in the moment, really, really important in the moment. I've witnessed things in the past. Ottawa and Toronto had a great series a few years ago, where Ottawa would, like, for 3 years running, would dominate the Maple Leafs during the regular season. And then Toronto would turn around. This is the Pat Quinn era. Toronto would turn around and run them out of the building in the playoffs. There was a major discrepancy between the playoffs and the regular season records and performances by the two teams. I think that's where Vegas is right now with this Minnesota Wild jinx or aura around the XL Energy Center. They're not hugely concerned that it would impact a playoff series, but in the moment, when you examine the questions that you're going to be asked and just the innuendo going into a series about troubles and being in that arena, I think it was massive. And I think the first period was important to stand up and have a bit of a back alley fight against the Minnesota Wild and then come out of that feeling good about yourself and being able to win in a challenging moment where you have to tie the game late and win it in overtime. I think it psychologically it means a lot to this team going forward. And you couple it with Colorado's loss last night, blowing a third period lead, and now it looks even more reasonable that Vegas will be able to hold on to that first place lead in the West Division for the number one seed.
Certainly if they take care of business before that game against Colorado, but that one might mean a whole lot next week. Darren Millard, host down in Vegas, also does the Chirp podcast, which I'll reference again in just 1 second. You can find it on NHL.com. He joins us here today. So you tell me, in the Honda West, is it a two-horse race between Vegas and Colorado, a three-horse race with that other team you mentioned, or is it actually a four-horse race? We've had some texters recently say, watch out for St. Louis. They look a lot better recently.
Yeah, I would say for first place, it's a three-horse race. Minnesota's made a big run, and they got the extra point out of last night, and they're breathing down the neck of Colorado for second right now, and certainly within reach of the Golden Knights should things go sideways. Now, they'd have to catch two teams, and you're playing interdivisional games. It's a little bit more difficult right now to catch two. But there's a path there for the Minnesota Wild. They've been impressive. Kirill Kaprizov, I know that Jason Robertson's have a great season, and not to take anything away from him in Dallas right now, but the explosiveness, skill level, dynamic abilities of Kaprizov. He's my rookie of the year, and I've just had the ability to see him firsthand, and his skating ability is second to none, and he's got just an edge to him too, and that's what kind of puts it over the top. Is he's just not a wallflower. He likes to get in, and ask Zach Whitecloud about that with the bloody nose last night. So I get off topic there, but a three horse race for the top three seeds and home ice advantage. St. Louis, I've been worried about for a while, and then you look at they were a team that was embarrassed on home ice by Vegas about 3 weeks ago, and it was the first game of a two-game series, and St. Louis came back, won the second game, and they've been on a roll ever since. And the goaltending's been a little bit better. Defensive play has been better. Mike Hoffman, Ryan O'Reilly have been really, really good. Blais been much better there. Perron, you always have to be aware of. But they just, it's like they got things read to them in a not-so-nice way by the coaching staff and the management, and I think both address them, and they've responded. They will not be an easy out by any means, and if it's Vegas and St. Louis, you got to be aware of that. And Vegas has dominated the season series. The only thing I would say is Vegas has St. Louis's best player from a year ago, and that Stanley Cup team now. So that has to be a little bit of an advantage. But that that St. Louis team, Shane Nighty and I have had a couple of conversations about it, our TV analysts here. They are concerning.
Well, Jordan Binnington might fight Petrangelo and everybody else for that matter, the way he's going this season. Hey, I referenced the podcast. I'm really enjoying it. I think a lot of our listeners are as well. The Chirp on NHL.com. Recent episode featured Sam Bennett. Sam Bennett goes down to Florida. We know about the offensive production. I really enjoyed your conversation. What did you take from the conversation and what you've seen since he got traded to Florida?
I just think that he's been able to relax a little bit and just like play hockey again instead of thinking about hockey and thinking about it from a shift to shift standpoint. Now, I will say this: he went to the beach, he bobbed in the water, he's been able to decompress since he's gone to Florida. and been able to relax. So there's that part of it off the ice, not dealing with all the pressure of being a top 10 pick. But he's also played with some great players. He's playing in the middle, and he's playing on a team that is rolling and has all the confidence in the world. This Florida Panther team, this group of the Florida Panthers, has underachieved in recent years, and now they're kind of fulfilling expectations, and it's all coming together at one. But I found him just to be more relaxed. I don't think he does that interview post-trade deadline if he's in Calgary as opposed to Florida. I just don't think he wants anything to do with chatting with me about stuff, and I think it came through in the fact that he's much more relaxed, that he, one, did the interview, and two, was really open and honest about everything during the conversation.
Darren, I don't know if you've been following along with kind of what's happening up here, just COVID pandemic wise. Of course, Canada's basically in the middle of a third wave and a bit of a lockdown still. But down in Vegas, you've got fans in the stands. I believe I heard Vegas and casinos are opening up if they haven't opened up pretty soon. What's it been like having fans back in the stands, and are they going to kind of increase that for playoff time?
Yeah, well, we're increasing it, not we, but they're increasing it tomorrow night against
the
Blues, and it'll be close to like just a little over 40% capacity. Now imagine that, 40% capacity of a National Hockey League game, and there hasn't been a fan in the stands to watch either Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews' incredible runs this year for all 50 games. So it gives you a little bit of an idea of how different the landscapes are right now. We had no fans. There's no fans at the start of the year, and just being in the building was a big boost to the Golden Knight players. They really enjoyed from the bubble experience to being in their own building, and then they went to 15%. And I'm not gonna lie to you, it felt life changing to have people in the building. There was little things like a clear on a penalty kill where the murmur, that piped in murmur, can't replicate mm-hmm. the cheering of just clearing a zone on the penalty kill, or a referee not making a call and the instant reaction of fans. And then they went up to 20%, and it felt like 80% were in the building, that little bit more. So I'm excited to see just over 40% tomorrow. They'll have 40% for an American Hockey League game at T-Mobile Arena on Saturday. They have a doubleheader here. The Silver Knights and then the Golden Knights play a doubleheader on Saturday. So it's not back to normal, but if you compare it to where Canada is right now, I think it's certainly a lot different. Like, casinos are 100% capacity now. We're down to 3 feet of social distancing. It's moving along, and part of that is obviously, you mentioned the vaccination and the third wave. They got ahead of the third wave with the vaccinations here, and the population is a certain majority of the population, over 50%, has received one shot, and they're working on the second shot. So it's different climate. I know that there's some comments and concern about the Canadian, whoever wins the North Division, having to play in the United States for that third and the fourth round. I think the players are going to welcome it because they're going to get to play before in front of fans for the first time in more than a year. There's the travel, and there's being on the road, and there's all that. But being in front of, playing in front of fans, I think is one of those aspects that hasn't been talked about, is a real benefit to those players who will experience that for the first time. And I think that's going to give them a bit of an unintended bolt of energy.
Yeah, I think there's that. And I also think it'll be an easy sell if it's, hey, this is the best thing for us. You know what, man? I don't care. I just need 4 wins to get the Stanley Cup final. I'll play them on Mars if you want me to at this point. Hey, Darren, awesome stuff. Thank you very much for your insight today. We always welcome you back. I know you're a busy guy, but we will do this again soon, okay?
Can't wait. Anytime I can be on, I will certainly answer the phone, and love talking about the Canucks. I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, you guys, that they get this whole thing sorted out with Travis and that he signs a long-term deal, because I think he's one heck of a coach.
It's a nice note to end on. Thank you, Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
Be good. See you guys.
I'm not as confident that they get things sorted out and that he's the head coach. I think he's a coach next year in the National Hockey League. I don't know if it's in Vancouver, and who knows how his frustration levels will rise or not, or if they've just reached a threshold at some point. I mean, that's been a working theory all along with the Canucks head coach, is that at some point, if he didn't have this done, is he going to go the route of an Ian Clark? Like, there's a lot of smoke for the last six, 8 weeks that Ian Clark's kind of made his mind up that if you haven't tied things up with me now, I'm going to be a free agent. I'm not closing the door on you, but I'm not closing the door on anybody else either, that I might go somewhere else. And there's a lot of speculation as to where. Does Travis Green have it in his mind that he's doing the same thing, despite what's being said publicly? Are they even going to offer him what is fair value for his services moving forward? A lot of questions around the Vancouver Canucks coaching situation.
I know we're up against the break, Scott, but I do want to talk when we come back with our listeners, and I want to get a little listener response as well, because someone texted in to us when he was talking about fans in the stands, and the text was, "It's actually sad how much I miss the arena." And I'm a little sad right now, and I want to tell the listeners why on the other side.
Well, there's an opportunity, and I hope they grab a hold of it. We'll get into it next on Rintoul and Sermon. You can get in on our exchange as we talk about different things and form that into dialogue here. Somebody doesn't like the fact that I use conversation a lot in my language.
They have to drink again, Scott. Their listening audience apparently has to drink every time you say conversation.
Sure.
Hey,
let's do that.
It's a good way to have some fun before noon, Scotty. I don't know if everybody should do it, but hey, you never know.
It might be a tete-a-tete. It might be a heart-to-heart. I have no idea where this is going to go. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. Final hour of the program for today. Why are you sad?
Okay, so when I asked Darren Millard about, you know, what it was like to have fans in the stands and if they're going to have more, and they're going to go up to 40%. Like, I think that's one of the higher capacities indoors for any basketball or NHL. I believe the Tampa Bay Lightning said they're going up to 30-something for the playoffs, so they're going to increase that. But I got a little melancholy because, like I said, that one texter or a listener texted in about the fact, you know, it's actually kind of sad how sad I am about missing live sports. And I'm feeling very nostalgic lately about the fact I am missing going to these sporty events, Scott, because first when this pandemic hit, and of course, you know, everything was in the bubble, there were no fans anywhere. Baseball a little bit towards the end of last season, but not too much, just maybe the postseason. But then when I saw like college football last year, and you see the fans in the South at LSU games, Alabama games, and it looks like there's no COVID. And at this time, Scott, there was no really vaccine rollout across the world. We were still having those being produced, and you know, we knew the importance of social distancing and masks, and to see that, I was kind of horrified. I'm like, there's no way I want to be in that setting at all. Like, not at all. But now, you know, as the vaccines start rolling out, you see how you can socially distance in arenas as well, and how there's a lot of room in between people. And I'm just to the point where I'm like, I could be comfortable again in that setting. Now, I've had my first shot, Scott. You know, the hope is that the second shot will come sometime this summer, and we'll be good to go in at least that aspect of it. But and just seeing fans in the stands being able to cheer, like that Vegas-Minnesota comeback by Minnesota on home ice a couple of nights ago when they scored those three goals and those two back-to-backs goals really quick to take the lead. Like the fans jumping up in the stands, it's just like, oh yeah, I miss that. I cannot wait for that to happen again.
I think we all miss it. I think we're all in different spots as far as how comfortable we are with certain things. Like there might be some people who are okay with a 10% crowd right now or a 40%. There's listeners out there that would be happy to go into a jam-packed building right now. I'm not sure I'm there.
Like, I'm not
I watched the NFL draft a week ago, and I saw all of the people in Cleveland, and it looked, other than the fact that some people had masks on, not all, but some people had masks on, it looked like a typical NFL draft as far as a gathering audience was concerned. And I'll be honest, watching it, it was somewhat uncomfortable. Like, I want to get back there, but I don't think I could go 0 to 100 right away.
Now, knowing the fact, though, Scott, at the draft inside, every single one of those person inside had been fully vaccinated. And I believe they had to get tested as well prior to going in there, some sort of rapid test. But at least you knew they were fully vaccinated. Would that have changed your, like, if you were in that situation?
It's hard to say because we sit in the climate right now where that's not even close to happening. So as we get closer to that, maybe you become more comfortable with the idea as more people get vaccinated, higher percentage of the population. And likely a lot of those people had interacted in smaller crowds before they got to a big one. I just don't know if I could go from where we're sitting here today into a jam-packed arena and be completely comfortable with it. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. Certainly for my job, it's one of the things that you may have to do. I'm not sure just internally, if I'm being honest, that I would be comfortable with it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable in the setting of like a controlled 40%, 20%, whatever the case is, social distancing, watching a baseball game or watching a hockey game. I have a friend of mine, Scott, that actually just came back from Texas. He was there to scout the U18s, and he went to a game at the Texas Rangers home ballpark, that new ballpark they have there, and he said it was amazing. And again, they don't have any sort of social distancing in the States. There's a mask mandate, quote unquote, in the arena, or sorry, in the stadium there, but it's not a hard and fast rule. It's kind of a suggestion in Texas right now. And he said it was one of the best things that he's ever been to. And he actually contemplated staying down there for the next 2 months because financially he could. And just to be, you know, be able to do some quote unquote normal things. Now, again, he may have a different opinion on what he's comfortable with, but I was super jealous even just listening to him, just being like, wow, you get to go to a baseball game. Like up here in Canada, we don't have that ability to do anything. And like even the CFL, like, are they going to have fans in the stands when they come in August? Like, what's that going to look like? And that's probably our first chance, Scott, up here in Canada, that any of us are going to be able to go to any sort of live sporting event.
We'll see. Baseball, maybe, depending on what market you happen to reside in. Shane and Courtney text in. I think I'm right there with you, Shane, where you say, I'd just like to go out for dinner. Like, yes, that would be great.
Yeah.
Like, I would accept that as a first step if we were in a place where we could do that. Understand why we're not. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. Would you pretend to date somebody to go, though, Karen? I'm not saying they're pretending. I am not saying they're pretending, but it did cross my mind. We told you about the story earlier in the week of that couple who went to an Arizona Diamondbacks game. The roommate said, hey, Arizona Diamondbacks, can you check on my roommate? I want to know how the second date is going. They showed up at the Coyotes game last night, and they were in Coyotes jerseys. So obviously the Arizona Coyotes went, look what happened for the Diamondbacks. Look at the run they got out of this. Let's invite them to a game. So the third date took place at the arena last night. They put the picture on social. They're wearing Coyotes jerseys. I'm guessing the tickets were comped. I'm guessing the jerseys were comped. I'm guessing a bunch of it was comped last night. They're having fun with this. Now, I hope that they like each other, and I hope this leads to a relationship, however long it lasts. I hope they enjoy each other's time. But it did cross my mind that maybe it gets to some point, because they tweeted out, hey, Phoenix Suns, you guys want in on this party kind of thing?
Right.
Like, if they've already realized, look, there's probably no spark here. It's not going anywhere. But we both like sports, and I think you're pretty cool. Like, this might end up being a friend thing. Should we pretend that we're going out for a while just so we can get to some events?
Yes, absolutely you should. I think that's 100%. Again, I don't want to be the jaded person that thinks they're just doing this to go see sporting events. I would like to be, you know, this is Cupid and things are working out and they actually like each other and they're going to see where this goes. It's pretty cool to get to see where this goes and go on dates to sporting events. And I mean, hey, the Phoenix Suns get to do it, Scott. They're the number one team in the Western Conference right now. They're an exciting basketball team. Like, they have a chance to go on a title run, and that ticket is probably pretty expensive. I don't know the background of these kids' stories. They look quite young, in their early 20s. Maybe they're college students. Maybe they live, you know, we call it in residence up here, but maybe they live in dorms down there. They don't live with their parents. Maybe they have, you know, they're living off scholarships, whatever the case may be. I have no idea. But I mean, if you get a chance to go to an NBA basketball game for free and, again, have this publicity, like, yes, take advantage of it while you can.
Sure, that's great for a week, a couple of weeks. My question is, how long would you be willing to put up with the charade? So 6 months down the road, would you still be willing to do this and say, well, look, I really like going to sporting events. We don't actually have a relationship. It also means that I'm not going to have another relationship, because if I get caught doing that, everybody knows that the jig is up and I can't go to the game anymore, so I'm going to cut myself off in that part of my life in order to attend games. Like, how long would you keep the charade up?
It depends. How big Arizona Cardinal fans are you? If you're big Arizona Cardinal fans, you know, you keep it up until the fall so you can go see some home Arizona Cardinal games. Absolutely. Keep the charade going.
I'm not going to date anyone in the summer. I am going to just put that part of my life on hold because I'm okay with going to sporting events. That's what you'd be willing to do.
Personally, probably
not. There was a pause there. There was a pause there.
Oh, I hope my boyfriend's not listening right now. Would you? Come on.
I would do it for a while, but not for terribly long.
See,
I don't think I would.
You'd probably see what you could get out of it in the short term, and then it would run its course, especially if, but maybe if you're friends, you know, maybe if you can figure out, okay, at least we can be friends in this situation. If there's something where it's got, you don't really like each other, you don't get along, then you can only probably play that charade for so long to get free, I was going to say a bad word there, free stuff. But yeah, it's, I don't think I could have the longevity in me to do this long term.
Free shirts, I think, is what you were going to say. Free shirts. It's Rintoul. It's Sermon.
Sure.
We've talked a lot about hockey, and we'll get into more hockey later this segment and later this hour as well. There are a bunch of games on ice tonight, some with playoff implications, and they do involve Canadian teams, though not every Canadian team involved has playoff implications, if you know what I'm getting at. I do want to touch on a couple of things from baseball. Albert Pujols has been designated for assignment today. It's the final year of his whopping 10-year contract that the Angels gave him when he finally decided, okay, I'm out, I'm leaving St. Louis. A lot of people thought, with everything he did with the Cardinals and how he became a legend in that city and winning all of the awards that he won there, he's going straight into the Hall of Fame the second he's done, that he'd never leave there. He took the money. He went to the Angels. Now you're in year 10. The breakup's coming just a few months before it was probably going to happen, and it's because he's just not good enough to hold down the spot. Like, his replacement is better. They've had to screw around with their lineup a little bit. Your reaction to what you're hearing today about Albert Pujols being designated for assignment and basically the breakup at the end of his 10-year deal?
A couple of things. One, I was like, he's still in that 10-year deal? Like, I knew he was still there, but at some point I thought, wow, he's still in that 10-year contract? Two, it's disappointing to see a player of his stature, Scott, and I know he hasn't had the career in Los Angeles as of late that he had in St. Louis, but, I mean, he was one of baseball's biggest stars for the longest time. And to see kind of where he's kind of fallen to and that this might be how his career ends. Like, I'd like Albert Pujols to be allowed to go out on his own terms. Like, I'd like to hear Albert Pujols be able to say, like, I'm walking away and retiring from the game. Not everybody gets that, I understand. But I think he's earned that in terms of what he's done for baseball.
Okay, so he's had that opportunity. I know without knowing that the Angels have offered him that opportunity. I know they've offered that to him. We saw it with Ken Griffey Jr. Like, at the end of Ken Griffey Jr. in Seattle, he just all of a sudden retired. Rather than, let's not go down the DFA, let's not try to keep making up excuses as to why you're not playing. Like, the Angels would have to have no brain not to have said this to Albert Pujols. Like, how do you want to handle this? We cannot continue to run you out there, and yet we have pressure to keep running you out there because of who you are and your stature in the game. But from a competitive standpoint, we can't keep doing this. Do you want to retire? What do you want to do? Pujols obviously didn't want to take that off-ramp, so here we are where business overtakes stature in the game and what you talked about him earning. Like, are they obliged to keep playing him all the way to season's end just because he's Albert Pujols?
No, they're not, and I guess that's the point. Like, Scott, they've lost 4 in a row. They're 13-16. They're last in the AL West. This is a team, this is a franchise that has the best player in baseball in Mike Trout, has never been able to do anything good with him. They've got Shohei Ohtani. They brought in Joe Maddon. Like, they are trying to make moves, and they need to make moves to be a better team. And I guess, you know, if this makes them better and they are forced to put him in the lineup just based on his name, I do understand that from a franchise point of view. And Albert Pujols obviously believes, you know, that he still has something to give to the game of baseball. But it's just disappointing to me that we're at this point with him, I think, is where I'm at with this. It's disappointed that this is how it's going to end, maybe, for Albert Pujols. Will someone pick him up? Maybe. Go to another team? I don't know. But it's just disappointed that this is kind of where the mighty have fallen to, I guess.
So is it the disappointment that Pujols can't look himself in the mirror at this point of his career and say, all right, I'm just not what I used to be. I need to let this go, even though I wanted to get to the end of this deal? Or is it disappointment that the Angels have gotten it to a point with him where they don't believe they can say, okay, we're just going to suck it up for another few months?
Well, I think as an organization, they owe it to their fans to put the best product on the field and the best team to give them the best chance of winning. Of course, again, they just haven't won, and they need to figure out something to turn it around. You're going to waste the best player in baseball if you don't figure something out, because he's signed on long-term. I think I'm just disappointed with the whole situation and where it got to. Like, Albert Pujols has made his money over his career. He could have walked away a couple of years ago because it has been a downward trend for Albert Pujols, and he could have walked away and said, you know what, I made my money, I'm not where I was. But obviously he loves, I don't know if he loves the game, Scott, or he loves the money, or what the situation is, but obviously he's not been able to look himself in the mirror and say, time might be now to step away.
Might just be simple as pride. It might be as simple as pride. Something like that. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. You and I disagreed on the 7-inning no-hitter a couple of weeks ago, and that's how I believe it should be filed. 7-inning no-hitter, that's what it is. Just not your traditional no-hitter. We got a We got a near perfect game. They called it the imperfect perfect game yesterday.
Yeah.
So the first perfect game was thrown on the exact same date 117 years ago. Cy Young threw it. He threw a perfect game. Or was it a no-hitter? No, I think it was the first perfect game, if I remember the stat correctly. So he threw the first perfect game 117 years ago yesterday. Yesterday, John Means of the Orioles threw the first imperfect perfect game.
Yeah.
It's the first no-hitter in league history that the only reason it's not a no-hitter is because a third strike was not caught by the catcher and the batter advanced to first because the ball went to the backstop. They couldn't get it there in time. So he struck the guy out. I think baseball fans know that can happen where you can strike somebody out, but because of a drop third strike, runner can advance if he beats the thrower to first. That's exactly what happened. Because of that, it's not a perfect game. It is a complete game no-hitter. Now, he wasn't upset about it. He was really happy just to have a no-hitter. He didn't care that it wasn't a perfect game. I saw people arguing that it's a dumb rule. This shouldn't prevent him from having a perfect game. Where did you come out on that?
I came out that if a player gets on base by any form, it's no longer a perfect game, Scott. I understand he faced the minimum amount of batters when it comes to, 27 up, 27 down. But this is the one time where I'm going to be a stickler for the rule, Scott. I'm going to say is if someone gets on base, then I can't see it a perfect game, no matter how he gets there.
No, and Means didn't have a problem with it. Nobody else is really kicking up a stink. It's just that some people said, we want to find a way to make this better than it actually already is. And he did get everybody out, but that wild pitch, the catcher kind of stood up, went between his legs. Should that really prevent him from having a perfect game? Like, it's a rule. And so now, all of a sudden, because it cost somebody a perfect game, people want to change the rule. Like, it's a dumb rule today, or you've been fighting for this for years?
Yeah, you're only fighting for it now because there's a situation where this happened. I mean, he got the no-hitter. He was super excited. Hey, Mariners fans, you should be excited. At least Felix Hernandez is the last guy to still throw a perfect game. Hey, we saw it earlier this year. Like, what do you think Rodon feels like? Again, it's a little different. He hit the batter in the foot in the ninth inning to ruin the perfect game, but he still gets the no-hitter. You get to join a list of a pretty impressive list when it comes to, maybe it's not as impressive as it used to be, but you still threw a major league no-hitter. Like, that's pretty cool. Not everybody does it.
Well, John Means felt the exact same way as you, and maybe if he'd kicked up a little bit of a fuss, maybe it gets more legs. I just thought it was an interesting argument that some people were making. I promised you this audio a little bit earlier in the show, and I want to get our audience's reaction to this. We've had a lot of reaction coming in today to 960, 960, 650, 650, and it's about everything that's transpired in New York this week, instigated by, well, some would say Artemi Panarin. I would say Tom Wilson personally, but that's been a point of contention with some of our listeners over the course of the week. And the issue that's arisen after last night is, okay, where are we at with fighting and what do we want to be selling? Where does the NHL need to go to become bigger and better and generate more revenue? Chris Versteeg has been fairly outspoken on this. You all know the role he played in the National Hockey League. Here's what he had to say about the Wilson-Panarin incident and where it intersects with fan engagement and future fan engagement.
Not last night. The fights are still part of the game. I'm fine with that. But what happened the night before with Tom Wilson, again, I'm not on the fence of he needs to be suspended for life or 50 games or 20 games or 30 games. And he doesn't need to be a $5,000 fine. I'm like, you got to give him something for the intent. To basically, he could have killed him if he would have hit his head a little harder, you know? Or if he didn't be killed, maybe he cracks his skull and he can't play again. He was that close. Mm-hmm. So treat it as such. That is an intent to injure. It was a malicious play. So treat it as such. And last night could have been completely helped if you would have even just gave him a one-game suspension.
Dude,
and
yeah.
They didn't do that. So they didn't promote player safety. So if you're going to look at going forward in the league, and you're looking at the Fairweather fan. I'm just looking at the Fairweather fan with a child who maybe wants to put their kid in hockey or start watching it. That, for me, you're possibly losing a person who's going to play the game in 5, 10, 15 years from now, and you're possibly losing someone who could be a fan a day or two or 5 years from now. Now, people like us, again, we've been around the game forever. It's normal to us. I'm talking about introducing new eyeballs to the game.
And it's funny he mentioned that, Scott, and I thought about this in terms of not the Wilson-Panarin incident, but what happened last night. And I think a texter earlier said, like, I I loved growing up. I loved the fighting in hockey. I watched it with my kid. He thought last night was awesome. I've also seen the text on the other side. Again, you know, dad saying, I loved fighting growing up, but I asked my kid, does he want to play hockey? He goes, no, that's too dangerous. You know, so there's both sides of it, and you have to kind of weigh what are the benefits to having this in the game versus people looking at this and saying it's too dangerous a sport to play.
Well, and part of it is the next wave and what it does to the kids. The other part of it is the uninitiated fan. And Versteeg is arguing that if you do more to promote the individual skill level, the brilliance of a Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, go down the list of stars in the game, he believes that will attract more attention both in North America and globally, if that's where your focus is. The hosts on the program in which he was on in Toronto pushed back and said, well, what about the fact that there were people who tuned into that game last night that wouldn't have normally? They see it, they like an aspect of it, and maybe they're new fans. I'm more on the Versteeg side of the argument, but I do recognize that there's an argument to be made for that side of things. And we've had listeners throughout the course of the show today, Karen, point out, look, you can't compare hockey to basketball. You can't compare it to some of these other sports. It's very unique, and that's the aspect you need to sell, that fighting is allowed in this game. And while there's a small penalty to be served relative to the other sports, that's what makes our sport unique, and you can actually attract people that way.
And, Scott, I think we have to see where this goes is, okay, you see people tuning in last night because, again, like the Tom Wilson incident, suspension, non-suspension, was all over all of ESPN's programming. Outside the lines, around the horn, pardon the interruption, tops of their sportscast. So it was front and center in a lot of viewers, on a lot of viewership. So a lot of people probably tuned in thinking, okay, what's this all this about? Let's go watch this hockey game, see what happens. And they tune in, and maybe because they either like that or they see a little bit something else they like, they tune in again. Just to see what this hockey thing's all about, or see, you know, and you don't see the skill, but they understand, okay, I like hockey. I like what's going on the ice. So there could be that situation as well. It's just eyeballs on the game just in general.
Yeah, but the flip side might be someone tunes in and says, well, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Like,
well, there's.
I heard there might be fighting, but I also just watched Pavel Buchnevich almost take a guy's head off by cross checking him in the face. I'm not sure I really want to see that. Like, there's both sides of this. It's really difficult to separate yourself as someone, and I think our listening audience for the most part falls into this, as someone who grew up with this and has had these debates time and time again, and wherever you're at with your satisfaction or dissatisfaction of where hockey's at and fighting and violence, like, we have a context that is steeped in history. And Versteeg is saying, okay, well, try to separate yourself from that for a second. Throw somebody into this situation who's never seen it before. What do you want them to see? What do you think is going to keep them coming back?
Yeah, and I don't think what happened last night is going to keep someone coming back. It might turn them into the fact that they could turn in and watch and they see the skill. I think the skill should be promoted. I think Turner and ESPN should go 100% on skill players and the young, talented players that the NHL has. I think that's where the marketing is, and I think that's where ESPN and Turner should go. And I think Turner's going to have a field day with some of this marketing that they have south of the border. But for me personally, it's the skill. It is.
It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. Bunch of games in the NHL tonight, some involving Canadian competition. We'll dive into that on Notes and Quotes, your texts as well, as we wrap things up here on a Thursday. You've got it with Rintoul and Sermon. Guys, fighting should not even be in the conversation here. It's all about unnecessary, violent, dirty, ugly, non-hockey plays like the ones Tom Wilson keeps making. If the NHL actually cared about player safety, they'd have suspended Wilson or maybe even banned him by now. Yeah, it's entertaining, all of it, but it's not right. It's not healthy. It's not good for the future of the game. Fighting will be here for a long time, but we don't need to the rest of the garbage violence. That's Kyle, who's a huge hockey and huge sports fan. He's from East Van. Lets us
apparently
know
30,
he's 37.
He's 37.
Well, just to give an idea of where he's from age-wise, yeah. Right? I think Kyle puts that in there to make note of the fact that, hey, I'm not a guy who says you got to go back to the old school, or I'm not a brand new. Just give an idea of where he is in the age demo. That's fine. Kyle, thank you very much for the text. I don't even think it's the biggest issue, Kyle. We raised it earlier in the show. I don't think fighting will ever go out of the game. I don't think it'll ever go. The question that I raise and has been raised before is, should the punishment be more severe for fighting? And I would be one that would be just fine with that if you fought in the game, that you had to hit the showers early and you're back the next game unless something truly egregious happened. Like if you jumped a guy and didn't have time for that player to respond and you pummeled him into the ice when it's an unsuspecting party, like obviously, in situations like that, we're talking about further suspensions. I know most people aren't there. That's okay. I'm very comfortable with where I'm at in this opinion. I agree with you. If I have to choose, Kyle, yes, I want the unnecessarily violent, dirty, ugly, non-hockey plays out before fighting.
Yeah. I want the punch to the back of the head from Wilson on Buzhnevich out. I don't like the, you know, cross check to the face by Buzhnevich on Anthony Mantha. I don't like a lot of what Tom Wilson does. You know, I'm okay where they are, Scott, with the fighting. You know, they do give penalties. They gave misconducts, and you can get game misconducts for certain things too. So I'm okay where they are with the penalties. I would not be opposed if they said you fight, you get kicked out. I wouldn't be opposed to that either. A little bit of breaking news coming in. We talked earlier this week, Scott, about the fact that Vancouver intended to bring Utica Comets back to Abbotsford, and the American Hockey League has officially approved that. The Board of Governors officially approved that. So the farm team will now be in Utica.
As if it was ever up in question. You don't release
right?
a statement.
I know.
You don't release a statement for your organization saying, hey, here's what we intend to do. By the way, the vote's in 2 days. Not sure which way it's going to go.
Oh, hey, good for Utica, though, because the Canucks loved the situation they had there. They thought it was a great situation. They got fans in the building. They liked the city of Utica. So the Devils are actually moving their farm team from Binghamton, New York, to Utica. So good for them. Good for Utica.
And this was also anticipated. It wasn't that long ago that people started to connect the dots because Utica, Robert Ashe-led group, filed for the trademark Utica Devils. And people
went, okay.
I see what's happening here. Where's Vancouver going? And people have just been waiting for that answer. We got it this week. So most of that, yes, I's dotted, T's crossed. It's going where we expected it to go. Keep those texts coming in right now. There's a lot of them. Someone saying the NHL is a joke as far as the league goes. But as far as promotion goes, nothing sells like a good villain. They should promote Wilson as a wrecking ball who can't be controlled even by the league. I think they kind of do. Not necessarily the league itself, but they don't mind that the montage going into last night's game was Tom Wilson, that the first time they meet next year against with the New York Rangers, Tom Wilson's going to be front and center, and Panarin hopefully is going to play in that game. And it's not the type of injury that we expect to keep him out till next season. He's just not going to be able to play this year. The league doesn't mind that aspect of it. I agree. You do need heroes and villains in sport to sell it.
Yeah, this text just came in. Just the Devils played in Utica before, apparently. I didn't know that, but hey, I'm just happy that Utica got one because I think it's a really good little hockey town and appears to be, like, at least from the Canuck point of view, in terms just it was across the country, across the continent. So that's the situation there. This unsigned text, Scotty, fighting can't leave hockey a part of history, but there still needs to be a level of safety and respect. And I 100% agree. And I think Scott and I have said this over the entire course of this conversation, is that the fact we are okay with fighting in hockey. There just maybe needs to be a change in punishment as per Scotty's. And I'm okay with the way it is right now. Again, just don't like the stupid, dirty stuff that happens from Tom Wilson.
TR and Courtney says, the thing is, if you make penalties harsher, then people will goad good players into a fight to get them either in the penalty box longer or out of the game completely. You can try, but those fights generally aren't accepted. I'll give you an example. Last night, I can't remember which Ranger it was, tried to fight TJ Oshie in the first period. There were 6 fights in the first 5 minutes. If you watched the game, as I did, someone threw down their gloves on the ice and actually tried to get Oshie to engage, and he turned and
really?
He went back to the bench. And they didn't actually hand out a penalty, which surprised me, because generally if somebody throws down the gloves, you're getting 2 minutes. Like, even though no roughing occurred, we're going to give you something. And they didn't penalize the player on the play. Oshie basically said, beat it, buddy. I'm not fighting you. I'm out of here. This has all been settled. And said good player, in this case, TJ Oshie, who went on to score a hat trick in the game last night, he declined the fight.
As is his right. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to.
Well, and somebody someone said this. I apologize. I know you were going to get one in as well. If a fight resulted in automatic suspension, which is not what I said, by the way, but someone said if the fight resulted in automatic suspension, I'd have my goons jump a star every game. Easy way to get them off the ice. It's an easy way to do it now. But people don't do it because of respect. This is what this entire conversation has been about since Monday, about respect. It's the reason that you don't have your fourth line plays 6 minutes a night guy simply skate as fast and as hard as he can into a goaltender every single game. You could do it. You can do it. If whoever plays the Jets in the first round, if the Oilers play the Jets, They could send Jujhar Khara if they wanted. They could send him like a missile at Connor Hellebuck. But that's not the way the game is played.
No, there's a level of respect from these players, Scott. They understand that you just don't run the star players. I mean, that's not where we are at this in terms of what hockey is right now. This one, last night's game, is an example of where the NHL needed Department of Player Safety to do some game management. Exactly. Like, you don't see last night's situation if you had suspended Tom Wilson. Even for one game, even for two games. He is a repeat offender, so I don't think he could have even got one or two. There's probably, I can't remember what the rule is, but if you've been suspended within the last 18 months, I think there's a minimum suspension that you can. I think Department of Player Safety have said it all along. They dropped the ball last night. Yeah, I tuned in and watched it. And yeah, it was fine for me in terms of what happened because no one got hurt, Scott. In terms of it, you can say Tom Wilson left the game with an upper body injury. Tom Wilson didn't play again because his coach didn't want anything more to happen to him. But I do think that this is where the league needs to come under criticism, and it's deserved criticism for what they didn't do.
Kristen and Nima, let's be honest here. Wilson's fine was fine. One game okay, maybe, but every team in the NHL wishes they had a Tom Wilson. That can't be the defense every time. Well, every team wishes they had him so he can do whatever he wants. Like, that can't be the answer. Chris goes on to say, plus that game last night is the most talked about thing right now. I agree with that, and it's kind of what has conflated a number of issues here. Is any publicity good publicity? I don't think it is.
I mean, the NHL got full publicity last night, Scott. Eyes were on their product. Was the game always scheduled to be on NBC as their Wednesday nighter, or did they change that? I don't know about that.
I believe it was supposed to be that game.
Okay. So
I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I have no idea about the scheduling in the States. But
hey, it was all over ESPN. It was all over everything. This fan, nothing would be more satisfying than watching Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews get their ass kicked by Tom Wilson. I will disagree with that. That's not something I want to see.
I think that's tongue-in-cheek, but maybe I'm wrong. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. There are six games in the National Hockey League tonight. Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews both participating, at least at last word. Vancouver at Edmonton. Oilers have already clinched a playoff spot. Oilers can lock up home ice advantage in the first round tonight as long as they get themselves 1 point. That's how much Winnipeg has fallen off, and obviously Montreal's gotten things together, not last night, but recently. But they're too far back to catch Edmonton. One of the questions about the Oilers, the pursuit of 100. Chances are it's not a seven-pointer tonight. You don't put anything off the table when it comes to McDavid. He's probably not getting there tonight. There might be a chance that on Saturday, depending on what happens against the Canucks. Is there any plan to rest him? Is there any plan to make sure that Connor McDavid is fresh, even if he's shy of 100 points? Here's what Dave Tippett had to say.
We'll continue to play him. He wants to play. He wants to make sure his game's ready for the playoffs. So we'll not overtax him, but we'll make sure we're not going to abnormally hold him out or hold his minutes way, way down either. You know, there's parts of the game that he wants to work on, and there's parts of a game our team needs to work on. He's a big part of that. So he'll play accordingly, depending on how the games go too.
I'm guessing May 13th, which is the Oilers' final game, and it happens to come against the Canucks, he's not playing 25 minutes that night.
Well, no. In the last two games, Scott, he's been under 20 minutes. 19:04 last game, 18:40. Again, those are kind of the situations of the games. The Oilers were up going into the third period, so you could see, you know, them rolling more of four lines. You know what? Like, here's the thing. Connor McDavid's going to get to 100 unless the worst thing happens, and I'm not going to even put that out there in the universe because I don't want fate to maybe come
true. Why would you even suggest that? Don't do that.
Saying. Hey, so he's gotten 5 points once this season, 4 points it looks like he's gotten about a handful of times. So there is a possibility that in the next two games he could get 100. Dave Tippett says that now, but I could see him maybe not playing that game against Vancouver down the stretch. I really could.
I think most people could see that happening. A little load management, if you will. Or maybe it's a situation like when Henrik Sedin's Ironman streak was intact. They had him go out there, do the quick shift, and then he didn't play the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Now, he was kind of injured at the time. Different scenario, but I could see that happening as well. As for the Vancouver Canucks, they've lost six straight. This is the first of six straight games on the road. The Canucks have not lost seven in a row for quite some time, Karen. Despite things going poorly and at times spinning this year, it's been a while since they lost seven straight.
They haven't lost seven straight since an eight-game slide, Scott. November 2018 for the Vancouver Canucks. It's getting difficult right now. They got two against Edmonton, obviously. Again, they can clinch second, at least second overall tonight. Do I see them losing out? No, I think there's some wins in there because they are trying, Scott. Like, it's not like you don't see the effort night in and out, night out. It's just like the level to get to that next gear with some of these players that they're throwing out there, it's just not there. I mean, you see JT Miller trying to do too much, and right now that's turning into harmful for his team and the frustrations right there. I do think there will be a win or so, but there's a scenario where it surpasses eight games for sure.
And there's a scenario where they finish last in the North, which some people will be just fine with. Some people will be fine with because it ups their percentage of getting that number one pick or a high pick in the draft and further augmenting their team moving forward. Travis Green was asked today in advance of tonight's game what his expectations are of his team over the remaining games.
Well, I mean, for our group, the expectations are high no matter what. Every game we play, we're going to play to win. And that's what we want out of our players. We want guys that love winning, and it's the NHL, and nothing's going to change there. Our compete level, our work ethic, we want guys to pay attention to detail. I know we've been playing a lot of games, and obviously physically, you know, our guys might be a little tired some nights, but I said it last week, you can still win when you're tired. We want to get guys that are mentally sharp, and part of that is being excited to play. We've got a lot of guys in that room that are also they have a lot to play for as far as the future, and our leaders and our vets understand that they've got to set an example as well.
So we've got Thatcher Demko in net tonight, Scott. Exact same lineup that Travis Green rolled out there a couple of nights ago. So that's, at least for now, Cole Lind on that top line with Bo Horvat and Tanner Pearson. We'll see what else shakes out. It'll be interesting to see, though, down the stretch. I'm really excited, though, we get to see
Jack Rathbone again.
Yeah, Jack Rathbone for a second straight game. I thought he held his own. He had we didn't really talk about it, but the welcome to the NHL moment when you're the last man back on a 2-1 with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and I thought he played the possession pretty decently. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what the kid can do in a second straight game. But yeah, it's going to be about playing the kids for Vancouver right now.
You know my policy.
What?
More redheads, the better. Get more redheads in the lineup. I don't care what team you're talking about. You'll win more games with more redheads. That's the deal.
He's very strawberry blonde. Like, he's got a lot of blonde in that red.
Is there red there?
There's a little bit. Yeah, there's a little bit.
Thank you very much. Get more redheads in your lineup. I can't wait to see the text line after I make that comment. Montreal at Toronto, the other all-Canadian affair. This game not very important for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the standings, certainly more important for the Montreal Canadiens. If the Habs get more points out of that game than the Canucks get out of theirs, they're into the playoffs. That's how it works.
So if the Habs get two, Canucks get one, they're in. If the Habs get one, Canucks get zero, they're in.
Yes.
Two, obviously, they're in. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. If they get more points out of that game than Vancouver gets out of its game with Edmonton, Montreal officially qualifies for Upper Canada. We all know they're going there. We're not quite sure what the matchup's going to be, whether it's going to be the one we're seeing tonight, Montreal-Toronto, or whether it's going to be Montreal-Edmonton in round number one. Auston Matthews, this is part of the watch tonight. This is a very interesting stat. So Matthews sits on 39 goals. Obviously, that means he can get to number 40 tonight. If he does that, he will become the first active player to score 40 goals in less than 50 games in a season. It is somewhat surprising to me that Alexander Ovechkin has not done that. I know that's an incredible pace, but because of Ovechkin's goal-scoring exploits over the years, I'm a little bit surprised that he never hit 40 before 50 games.
Yeah, when you told me that stat earlier, I was like, really? I mean, it's incredible what Auston Matthews has done, considering he hasn't actually played all the games this season, obviously, why he's just hitting the 50-game mark right now, if you do the math. But that Ovechkin never hit that point. Scott, who was the last guy to do it?
That would be Pavel Bure. He was the last guy to get to 40 goals in less than 50 games. He did it in 48 games back in 98-99 when he was with the Florida Panthers at the time. So the Auston Matthews goal watch is on.
Also, too, Frederik Andersen. Now, this is interesting for the Leafs fans out there, but he is down 2-0 to Manitoba. Are they still called the Moose?
Yes.
Still, yeah, Manitoba Moose. In his rehab stint in the AHL, of course, he's playing a little bit, maybe a little bit rusty, Scott. He hasn't seen game action since March 19th. So that's like, 6 weeks now, 7 weeks. So it's been quite a while. But I think this is probably pretty welcomed for Leafs fans just to see this. I know maybe the the results don't really matter at this point. It's just getting reps again and getting back up to game speed and seeing shots versus practice shots. So I think it's good. I do think, though, like, even if Freddie Anderson is ready, I think it's Jack Campbell's goal to start the playoffs, Scott. I think he has shown enough lately. I mean, we have to see how the season ends out. And
yeah, that's the one. That's the one right there. Let's see what the next week looks like.
We say that every week about honestly everything. Like, where will Connor McDavid be? Where will the Canucks be in the standings? Where will the Flames be in the standings? But talk to me tomorrow. But I do think that if he goes down the stretch, it's going to be Jack Campbell into game one.
I've speculated this for a very long time, that maybe if the Leafs make a run, it's Jack Campbell to start, but Freddie Anderson takes over at some point and carries the bulk of the load throughout the course of the playoffs. If they are going to string something together, maybe Eric Dubois getting a pre-scout for a first-round series. He's the father of Pierre-Luc Dubois, of course. He's one of the coaches with the Manitoba Moose. Who knows? Could be a first-round matchup. Montreal-Toronto goes tonight. Rangers right back in action tonight. Slightly less attention on this game. They're playing the Boston Bruins. They'll close the season with two in Boston. They'll play today. They will play on Saturday. New Jersey and the Islanders, both of those games important for the home teams as far as seeding mm-hmm. goes, whether we're talking about the Bruins or whether we're talking about the New York Islanders.
Yeah, Islanders struggling a little bit down the stretch. I know they lost a couple to Buffalo. They had an overtime loss in their last game as well. That was to Buffalo. But Boston, this is interesting for Boston, Scott, because Pittsburgh has played two more games than them and has a four-point lead right now in Boston. So Boston's in third, 52 games, 69 points, but still has four more to go. So if you're a Boston Bruins fan who have been playing really well as of late, and Taylor Hall obviously has made that roster a lot more lethal in terms of scoring goals. So it'd be interesting to see. Like, this is a pretty big game for Boston because we talk about not home ice advantage. We do. Like, does it matter? But they're going to have fans in the stands in all of these American arenas. And so the potential to have, you know, that game 7 home ice with fans, I think is huge down there.
I forgot to mention Pittsburgh plays tonight as well. So they will jockey for position in that East Division. Pittsburgh hosting Buffalo. You mentioned Taylor Hall. A story we haven't said much about, and I'm not sure how big a deal it is, but you know who's been really good since that trade? Anders Bjork. Anders Bjork has been very good for the Sabres since going over there. He was the throw-in in the deal. He was the, are you kidding me? This is all we got for Taylor Hall. You couldn't even get a first-round pick, and this is what is coming back. Anders Bjork in a second. Bjork's played quite well. Other game, Carolina trying to extend its lead atop the overall NHL standings, hosting the Chicago Blackhawks. News coming out that ESPN's going to take a run at the great one. There's a lot of rumors in the last, 15, 20 hours about who ESPN is getting on board. Ray Ferraro's name has been mentioned as perhaps the lead analyst for ESPN. I think that would be a very good mm-hmm. thing. He is the best or one of the best 2 to 3 at his job in all of hockey, in my opinion, and it sounds like they're going to take a run at the great one as well with the four-letter network, the mothership in the States.
What's the saying, Gretzky saying? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take? Yeah, ESPN, go big or go home. It's a big name in terms of, obviously, you know, the cachet, and everyone in the U.S. knows him, too. So, again, it's like, you know, if you're trying to get the casual hockey fan, well, they've got Wayne Gretzky. He's the best hockey player ever to play the game. Okay, maybe I'll tune in.
Greg's in my ear saying, no, that's a Michael Scott quote. Yeah, Michael Scott invented that. You're right. Wasn't it Michael Jordan, or is that a Gretzky quote? You missed 100% of the shots. Is it Gretzky or is it Jordan?
I thought it was Gretzky. Maybe.
I get confused.
It doesn't sound like something he would say.
It's Michael Scott from The Office, you guys.
Oh, stop it, Greg. This one coming out, too, when it comes to terms of broadcasting duo. So Turner and ESPN, obviously, they have the deals. It sounds like Eddie Olchuk. And is going to be part maybe to be the lead analyst for Turner's deal on that side of the thing. Of course, Olchuk has been the top cover with the NBC coverage, Scott. And I think the mention was the Kenny Albert pairing right now, who Kenny Albert is going to call actually the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time for NBC this year, because of course he took over in that lead role from Doc Emrick. Mike Tirico, of course, has been in there as well. But I do like the fact that Turner's going after an established duo already in Olchuk and Kenny Albert. You know, you have that chemistry, you don't have to work on anything, so that makes sense for them as well.
Olchuk's really good. Really good. And so is Ray Ferraro. I could see both of those guys getting those gigs if those come to fruition. But getting Gretzky in there, yeah, it brings a little something extra to the table. They can talk golf. They can talk a little Dustin Johnson, what's going on with the great one as well. Are you surprised he hasn't caddied for him at one point?
I don't think he wants the notoriety of being out there. Like, I don't think he's one to kind of overshadow Dustin Johnson. Like, do you see, like, you don't see him at his, the camera never finds him at the tournaments anymore.
It's rare. It's rare. You're right. Yeah. It's rare. That's more in the humble Wayne Gretzky area as well. You're right about that. Man, it's been a great day of interaction. It's been fun, and I know we don't all agree. That's kind of the point of sports debate. That's why sports radio exists. That's why you like sitting around with your buddies watching a game, because you don't all agree on everything, and somebody's got a different opinion. We welcome them here on this program. Whether you agree with us or not, the point is, let's not make it too personal. Let's just have a little bit of fun with it. You can be stubborn. You can be strong on your points. We respect that. Hopefully you respect the same coming from us. So big thank you to all of our listeners. Big thank you to producer Jamie Dodd, who's been a big part of our program once again today. Greg Ballack, back today. Thank you, sir. Back at Mission Control. Big ups to you. Karen, awesome show. It was fun today.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Same, I echo what you said to the listeners. You know, some people dig their feet in, and we like that. It's not a, we have no problem with that. Like you said, just keep it fun, keep it light, and, you know, we'll read as much as we can every day.
We're back for one final show tomorrow. You said to me earlier in the show, the weekend's in sight. I actually thought that to myself, like, you know, from Dazed and Confused, the Matthew McConaughey part, where, hey, man, you got any weed? And he says, no. He said, it'd be cooler if you did. I was like, it's Thursday, but it would be cooler if it was Friday. We'll have a Friday show for you tomorrow. We'll welcome you back. We'll turn things over to the big show in Calgary right now in Vancouver. It's Bick and the Boss. Enjoy the hockey and sports. We'll do it one more time tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.